Next case for argument is Gidey v. Ashcroft. Mr. Burton.
It's nice they shook hands. That's so nice.
Pardon?
They shook hands when they left. That's so nice.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Justin Burton. I'm here on behalf of Mrs. Gidey in her petition to review a decision from the Board of Immigration Appeals. It was actually a rather odd decision, once read a couple times over. In the decision, the Board of Immigration Appeals dismissed the appeal before it in stating that the hearing was fair on a whole, although the immigration judge was assertive in clarifying certain points before it.
Is there any evidence in the record that Ms. Gidey would not be permitted entrance to Ethiopia?
There is not, except for there is evidence inside the country reports that state that it's certainly difficult for people of Ethiopian extract to come back into Eritrea. The board seems to rely on administrative notice of the change in country conditions, where in the 2003 report saying that the conditions in Eritrea have changed substantially for the better since the time of the respondents, the petitioner's experiences. However, once the country conditions reports were pulled, it indicates far different. In fact, even the front page of the country conditions reports indicated that there still is committed serious human rights abuses in Eritrea for people throughout the country, not just people who didn't appear for the armed forces, but people of all races and ethnicities that remain in Eritrea as well. Before the immigration judge, Mrs. Gidey attempted to present her case before him. When presenting the case, testimony was solicited by counsel through a direct examination. Almost immediately, the immigration judge started questioning her almost in a patronizing fashion. In particular, she indicated that she was 6 years of age when her father had passed away, and the immigration judge started asking other questions about the year in which it took place, the date of her birth, and seemed to come off in a sort of demeaning fashion. This led into the slight assertive nature and conduct of the immigration court at that time. It then led through the rest of the proceeding where the immigration judge interrupted repeatedly and according to the Board of Immigration Appeals, assertive questions, but I guess it would depend on the disposition of the petitioner. In this case, Ms. Gidey was 22 years old at the time. She had served in the National Service from 1995 to 1997 when she was still a teenager. She's received very little formal education. Her father was killed, again, at an early age. Her brothers were forced into the armed services. Her mother was deported from Eritrea and never heard from again. So this is a young lady who's certainly out on her own. She was eventually married, although her husband's own efforts, even though he was Eritrean, couldn't save her from forced removal from that country.
Did she submit any affidavits from her husband regarding her persecution in Eritrea?
No, she didn't, Your Honor. I think she had made attempts to contact her husband to solicit an affidavit, but it was unsuccessful, unfortunately. She had relied on her own testimony in explaining the circumstances and relying on country reports as well as articles that are in the record that reflect the country conditions in which she fled. She did remain in Sudan for 9 months. However, the situation in Sudan is certainly one of which she cannot remain. Then she eventually made headway into the United States, where she stayed, and she still remains with her husband's brother. There are two classification of cases really that deal with the credibility finding that the immigration judge had made and whether
due process was violated at that time. There was Padilla versus INS, which indicated that due process was violated when huge chunks of testimony were left out of the record. Roman versus INS, although frequent interruptions by the immigration judge, didn't rise to the level of persecution. Due process violations.
Did she know any English, or was the translator, or was all the evidence presented by a translator?
It was all by translation, Judge. She knows very, very little English. At the time of her testimony, of recent, she has learned English a little bit just through her jobs that she's been working, but not to the extent where she can testify before a court by any means. However, we feel the frequent interruptions in this case, unlike in Roman, were more assertive, were more argumentative, to the point where she was almost taken aback and unable to testify freely by direct examination. Also, even eventually when she made it into cross-examination, the judge directed the assistant district counsel at that time to ask questions in a certain format and a certain way. So really he was just taking over the testimony. He was taking over the questions that were asked in the cross-examination, and also adjudicating the case as well, which led to, unfortunately, Ms. Gadeh not being able to properly present her case, and of course getting so nervous during the proceedings that she wasn't able to articulate in a way and manner that she wished to. When presenting asylum cases before the court, one has to establish also past persecution or a well-founded fear of persecution on account of one of the five grounds enumerated under the Act. We believe she did that. Despite the credibility finding, we can put that aside and hopefully come to a determination that even though she wasn't able to fully testify, she was able to put on a case on her behalf. Even the Board of Immigration Appeals oddly indicated that she didn't satisfy her burden of proof, although she had demonstrated she experienced past persecution. We believe also that she put forward a case where she established past persecution. This court has also determined that being driven from one's own country is persecution, just recently in Miljakovic, and we also feel in this case that she has established that. I don't think it does matter that she was in detention. Well, there seemed to be some sort of conflict in the record where she was in detention because of her ethnicity or because she deserted the army. In either event, she was put into a camp where there's just Ethiopians for deportation. So after the fact, after her arrest and some disagreement on why she was being arrested, I think it being clear why she was in detention at that time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Burke.
Thank
Mr.
you,
Fraser.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. I would like to begin, if I may, by responding to a few of counsel's comments. He indicated, first of all, that that the petitioner is of Ethiopian extraction. That's not really entirely true. She is a native and citizen of Eritrea. Her father, now deceased, was a native and citizen of Eritrea. Her husband is Eritrean. She served in the Eritrean National Army for an 18-month term.
Of course, one of the absurd things in the IJ's opinion is the notion that somehow serving in the Eritrean Army is a benefit conferred on you and shows you're an upstanding Eritrean. That clearly is not true.
I think, Your Honor,
I mean, when we had a draft, we drafted aliens. So
I think what to put that in
our
context,
next case,
Your Honor,
we have someone, you know, who's drafted into a kind of punishment battalion and sent to clear mines. So I don't see how the fact that she's drafted shows that she's well regarded by the Eritrean government.
I think the immigration judge made five findings along the lines of what I'm just discussing. His conclusion was regarding your comment, Your Honor, that she was deemed sufficiently Eritrean to perform national service. And he concluded with the statement that...
What does that mean? I mean, what do we know about the criteria for being drafted into the Eritrean Army?
We don't know anything from this record, Your Honor.
If we
want to draw inferences, which I'm reluctant to do.
They draft Jehovah's Witnesses. We know they hate Jehovah's Witnesses.
Eritrea became independent from Ethiopia in 1993. I think the fact that the petitioner was called to serve for 18 months in 1995 after independence, I think that means something.
I don't understand you. As I say, the United States, when we had a draft, aliens were drafted. It wasn't regarded as, you know, some privilege that to be drafted.
I understand, Your Honor.
Drafted, if I mean, Eritrea had this desperate war with Ethiopia. I'm sure they drafted. The fact they were drafting women suggests, you know, they were pretty desperate. You know, usually don't draft women. So
I make that comment, Your Honor, in connection with the other statements regarding
her
nationality.
But they don't seem to have any basis. Let me ask you this. Do Eritreans typically have birth certificates?
She had a birth certificate. Well, she had a certificate, a national identity card. I don't know if that's the equivalent of a birth certificate. Neither is in the...
It doesn't sound like a birth certificate now.
Neither is in the record. She conceded that she was Eritrean.
I mean, what I find disturbing about these cases is that the immigration judge, I don't know if they have a... Do these people get under any training in which they're... told something about the culture of the countries from which these people come?
The immigration judges?
It's obvious the immigration judge thinks Eritrea is, you know, just like the United States. And so, you know, people have a birth certificate. So why didn't she bring her birth certificate when she left or something? So, but as I say, is there some educational program in the immigration service so that immigration judges learn about the cultures of the countries from which people come seeking asylum?
Well, to the extent that they hear these cases every day, yes, there is, Your Honor.
But these cases never contain any evidence on these subjects.
The evidence, the burden of proof of corroboration is not on the immigration judge. And in this case, the immigration judge's concern was that there was no corroboration and no...
How do you make responsible credibility determinations if you don't know anything about the background of the case? The other thing is, what does it mean to make a credibility determination when someone is testifying through a translator?
And represented by counsel. There aren't problems with translation in this case. There's no allegation.
How do you assess credibility? How do you assess credibility? Because you don't... Because what the voice you're hearing and the intonations and the inflection and so on is that of a translator, not of the actual speaker.
And if this were a question of translation, then I would agree.
It's not the accuracy of the translation. No, you're not following me. I'm not making myself clear. We say that the reason we give all this deference to the trial judge is that trial judge not only saw the words, so to speak, had the words, but saw the expression and the tone and emphasis and pauses and all that, which enable you to evaluate credibility. Well, you can't do that if you have a translator, because then the pauses and the emphases and so on are the translators.
Your Honor is referring to a demeanor finding. There were no demeanor findings in this case. The inconsistencies and the discrepancies were based on saying one thing at one point, saying a different thing in another point, but they weren't based on the petitioner's demeanor. So I think what Your Honor is referring to is the latter, would be a demeanor-based credibility finding. That is not this case.
You know, approximately a year ago in Mengistu, we questioned whether conditions in Eritrea have changed sufficiently to assuage the fears of persons of Ethiopian ancestry who live in Eritrea. Has anything changed since the time of that decision that might make us more confident about the fate of Ethiopians in Eritrea?
In the context of the allegations in this case, yes. The allegations in this case pertain to petitioner testified that her family's problems began in 1999, actually 1998, specifically in 1999 when the government changed its policy, began closing the businesses of people of Ethiopian extraction and deporting them. What the board found is, by reference to the 2003 State Department report, is that that circumstance, that specific circumstance, has changed. And if I may quote from the State Department's report, which goes specifically to that point. And there are no other allegations in this case. She doesn't allege that she lived a life of discrimination or marginalization as a person of Ethiopian extraction. The State Department found during the year conditions remained difficult for Ethiopians living in the country, but most who wanted to leave had already done so. The Ethiopian embassy reported approximately 7,000 Ethiopians remained. Unlike in the previous year, there were no reports that the government targeted Ethiopians in particular for discrimination in renewing business licenses, residence permits, and employment. Well, that's what
there
happened
to her mother. There are only 7,000 Ethiopians left in Eritrea?
That's what
out of a couple of million people?
I don't know how many there were before, Your Honor.
I mean the population of Eritrea is several million, so 7,000, well, that's quite a small remnant.
To go back, Judge Rovin, to your comment, you have to look at the facts and the allegations of each case. They're very specific in this case.
What year was that?
This is the 2003 report. Actually, it's dated February 2004. I would be happy, if you don't mind my highlighting, to provide this my copy to the court.
Will Eritrea take her back?
Yes.
How do you know?
I don't have the statistics before me, but Eritreans we've been successful in removing Eritreans in the past.
Mm-hmm.
There has not yet been an attempt to obtain travel documents in this case,
right,
but there's been success in the past.
Mm-hmm. This is not part of the record, I suppose, but if you can answer, are there any studies about what happens to the people that are sent back, such as Ms. Gede, to Eritrea?
I'm not aware of any. Our government doesn't maintain contact with them, Your Honor, so...
Yeah.
And I don't know if the Department of State does.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. The BIA seemed to have thought that her detention might suffice for past persecution. And, of course, the IJ determined otherwise.
I think, admittedly, a less than clear finding. It's important to recognize that the first thing the BIA did was to adopt the no past persecution, no well-founded fear finding of the immigration judge. We know for a fact that the BIA didn't disagree with any of those findings. So the specific reference that you're making, Your Honor, I think what the BIA is doing is giving her the benefit of the doubt and saying even if she had established past persecution, we find that the resulting presumption would have been rebutted in this case. It's an alternative finding, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fraser.
Thank you.
Mr. Burton, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Respondents' counsel seems to indicate that there are two different types of credibility determinations, the second being a demeanor-based determination, which didn't happen in this case. However, he didn't even take the IJ didn't even take into consideration the demeanor of Mrs. Gede. In fact, at the end of the transcripts, you'll notice that they went off the record to give Mrs. Gede an opportunity to compose herself. It was due because Mrs. Gede was crying and she was unable to understand the interpretations that was translated to her by the translator by the immigration court. Also, Respondents' Counsel seems to indicate that the Board of Immigration Appeals seems to argue in the alternative. However, it doesn't seem so by a simple reading of the Board of Immigration Appeals decision that it was an argument in the alternative. Rather, it meant to clarify that even though they agreed and dismissed the appeal, that she may have demonstrated that she experienced past persecution. I think decisions from this court recently, in the past year, has indicated that that forced deportation from their home country would be persecution and at least rise the level of more than just mere harassment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burton.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Fraser. Last case for argument, Marek versus Ashcroft.